Okay, good evening.
What we did this past summer is we studied Rashi in terms of who he was, when he lived, and some of Rashi's methodology a bit, the differences between Rashi's commentary on Chumash and Rashi's commentary on Gemara and Rashi as a posek. We went through all of that, and I thought that it would make sense to try to learn the Rashi on the parasha, but not to do it the way we did it in grade school, to try to actually learn, and understand what Rashi is trying to teach us. So what I'd like to do with you this week, again, nothing particularly fancy, but just to learn the Rashis with you at the beginning of Parashat Ki Tavoh, meaning in this week's Parasha, and to try to understand what is motivating Rashi in his comments.
Well, it depends on who you...
So let's learn, and then we shouldn't talk about it before we learn it. Some of these Rashis will have nothing to say about. Other Rashis will have some comments. The Pasuk, the Torah, at the beginning of Ki Tavoh speaks about the mitzvah Bikurim. The first Pasuk says, V'haya Ki Tavoh la'aretz asher Hashem Elokecha noten lecha nachala v'yirishta v'yashavta ba. When you come into the land that God is giving you, and you will inherit the land. Now, the simple reading of this Pasuk is that God is promising the Jewish people that we will take over Eretz Yisrael. No? It's a promise. Rashi does not learn that the pasuk is a promise. Rashi learns, "Magid shelo nitchayvu bebikurim ad shekivshu et haaretz v'chilkuha." Rashi says that the Torah is saying that there's no obligation of bikurim until you conquer the land and divide the land. Divide the land means that all the Shvatim get their portions. Why does Rashi do this?
So key
might mean when. In other words, it's not a promise. Okay.
What could mean if?
So apparently, Rashi, for some reason, and I'm not really sure why, Rashi's understanding that the mitzvah of Bikurim is a mitzvah that's conditional on taking over the land, but there's no promise here that we'll take over the land. I'm not sure why. I've been bothered by this. Sometimes I'm just going to present my questions. If anyone has an answer, please tell me. I don't know. Next.
But it doesn't say explicitly the Yachas of all ours and or Hashem will kind of yitain his ours. It says when you come to the land that Hashem gives you.
Okay, so you're saying just that the expression of the Pasuk doesn't sound like there's a guarantee that we'll take the land. Although, generally when we have a mitzvah, we assume that Hashem is telling us it will happen. For some reason, this mitzvah of Bikurim, Rashi is kind of hedging. There's no promise. There's no promise that... I don't know.
Okay, this could be a radical approach.
Radical.
But,
could try.
But why would Rashi say that if we know that God's on our side and we're going to definitely win?
Okay. So let's say it like this. Sometimes Rashi is trying to explain the smichut ha-parshiot. What happens right at the end of Ki Teitzei? Amalek.
Right.
We will destroy Amalek. Is that a guarantee? Yes or no? You just said two things in half a sentence.
No, but we have God on our side, so...
So there's a mitzvah that we should destroy Amalek,
yeah.
But there's no guarantee. So Rashi is saying that when you come into the land, also no guarantee that it will happen. There's a mitzvah to destroy Amalek, the previous mitzvah. There's a mitzvah of Bikurim. That we should take it over. You could read it like that. It happens that like no one understands that this pasuk is a command. The command to take over Eretz Yisrael is found in Parashas Matos. I don't know. Hi, Henry.
Good evening. The way I look at it, I think there's some type of
quid pro quo between Hashem and Bnei Yisrael. If you keep my mitzvot, you'll get the land and you'll get to stay there. If you don't, it's goodbye, Charlie.
Maybe, but this pasuk doesn't say anything about keeping the mitzvot. Again, that's a common theme that's like in Kriya Shema every day. I don't know. I'm raising a problem. I don't have the solution. Let's go. Pasuk bet. V'lakachta me'reshit kol pri adama. You should take from the first of all the fruits of the land that you bring from your land that God gives you, and you should put it in a basket, and you go to the place that God chose to rest his name there. Okay, I don't know if Artsko translates exactly the way I did, but I assume that I could read Hebrew as well as Rabbi Artsko can. Now, or Mr. Artsko, Mrs. Artsko, whatever the term is.
What?
I didn't say that, but okay. Now, when you take Mereshit Kopri HaAdama, how do we translate this? When you take from the first of all the fruits. So the simple meaning of the pasuk would be that any fruit that you grow an apple, you grow an etrog, you grow an orange in Eretz Yisrael, you take some of those first fruits and you put them in a basket and you bring them to Yerushalayim, that's the mitzvah bikurim. Right? That would be the simple reading of the pasuk. And in fact, it would sound that way because the Torah says, kol pri ha'adama, all the fruits. By the way, I'm translating over here, pri ha'adama, as?
Fruits of the land.
Fruits of the land. Usually, what's pri ha'adama? A vegetable, no?
Yeah, right.
Usually, you make a bari pri ha'adama on a carrot, right? And on an apple, you make a bari pri ha'eit. This pasuk seems to indicate, like we passed in la halacha, that were a person to recite a bari pri ha'adama on the fruit, you'd be yotze, no?
Yeah.
Now, all fruits are called pri ha'adama. So you take mereshit kol pri ha'adama. Zakt Rashi. Mereshit. Rashi comments, velo kol reshit. It doesn't mean all the firsts. She'in kol ha'peros chayomim bebikurin, only the shivas haminim. It says eretz, and it says eretz chita sa'ora. Right? Just like over there, it's only the shivas haminim, etc. So Rashi is commenting that the pasuk don't mean what it says. The pasuk says that you take the first of all the fruits of the land, no? Rashi says it doesn't mean all the fruits. It means, or it doesn't mean all the vegetables, it means only from the first of these particular fruits. Because Rashi is making up a gezeira shava. This does not appear anywhere in Shas. It does not appear in Midrashei Halacha. Rashi is making it up, ladies and gentlemen. Made up. Rashi says that there's a gzeira shav, it says Eretz here, it says Eretz over there, only the shivas haminim is chayiv and bikurim. We know, by the way, that only the shivas haminim is chayiv and bikurim. Those are mishnayis from the first parak of bikurim. But this gzeira shav of Eretz, Eretz is made up by Rashi here. What?
Why
is bikurim? So bikurim is brought from the shivas haminim, the mishnayis sound like, because the mitzvah bikurim is to praise Hashem for the land, and the shivas haminim is the special shevach of Eretz Yisrael. The praise of Eretz Yisrael is on these seven fruits, right? Eretz chita, sa'ora, gefen, te'ena, rimon, right? Those are the shivas haminim, and those are only things that's chayiv in bikurim. Yeah, Yaakov?
Rashi says below kol reshit. That's fine, because it just says reshit.
Well, Rashi is playing on the mem of mei reshit, from the firsts,
right.
Not the entire first, okay?
Fine, but how does he define kol pri? Suddenly he's saying, it says kol pri though, what does that
so
mean?
Apparently, Rashi is limiting kol pri to be only the pri of Shiv'at Haminim.
He is.
Because of this Gezeira Shava.
If it had said Me'reshit pri, and he said, oh, you know what, pri just means this, but what is kol
pri? Right, the kol pri is difficult, but probably what Rashi means is that any type of fruit from the, any type of grape, you could be chayiv and bikurim. There are many different types of grapes, no? Apparently, Rashi is saying this, again, I'm not really sure why Rashi is doing this, but again, we're just trying to understand it. There is, by the way, when I was in nursery school, I learned a song for Bikurim. Saleinu akteifeinu rasheinu akurim mitzoha aretz banu heifeinu bikurim min Yehuda v'hashomron min ha'emek v'hagalil Panu derech lanu bikurim itanu ha ha chakbatov halo v'chalio. Remember the song?
Yeah, the words.
Yeah. Okay. So the problem with the words to this song is, I think there are five mistakes in Hilchos Bikurim in that song.
Wow. One is how you harvest.
What?
One of them would be how you harvest.
Explain.
Right. You're supposed to use
a sickle.
And like so, a chalil would not be.
Well, a chalil is that they play music.
No, sorry, not saying, but I didn't hear a word exactly.
The mistakes in that song are as follows. The song says, Rashenu Aturim, that our heads have crowns on them. There is a halach of Itur Bikurim, but in the Mishnah you say that Itur Bikurim is that you put a crown on the head of the animal that carries the fruit up to Yerushalayim. You don't wear a crown on your head. Okay. And then it also says that you're bringing the Bikurim min ha'emek v'hagalil. The Mishnah says that you don't bring bikurim from the fruits of the Emek, because fruit that grows in the valley is apparently lousy fruit. That's what the Mishnah says. And you only bring bikurim from the better fruits, because you need fruit in the shtabcha behen Eretz Yisrael. The reason I'm saying this is I'm really not sure. Rashi over here sounds like you bring some of the first fruits, right? Only from the Shivas Haminim. And then, again, right, we might end up with more problems than we started with. Rashi comments, then going back to the pasuk of the Shiv'at HaMinim, Rashi says, Zayt Shemen is Zayit Aguri Sheshomno Agur B'Tolcho. You notice that Rashi over here is commenting on a pasuk that doesn't appear here. Right? The pasuk is in Parshas Ekev, where the Torah speaks about Eretz Chitaso Ra Geventina Rimon Eretz Zayt Shemen Udvash. And Rashi over here, since we're talking about Shivas Haminim, so Rashi is by the Raikasha, whoa, Zeis Shemen, Bikurim, you got to bring the fruit. You don't bring liquid as Bikurim. So Rashi says, oh, Zeis Shemen means the olive that you get the oil out of. And the Vash means the date that you get the honey out of. Right? So Rashi over here is pulling a trick on us, no? Rashi's interpreting a pasuk that ain't here, over here, in order to shed light. Just another technical question. Where do you bring Bikurim to?
The Beit HaMikdash.
Did they bring Bikurim to the Mishkan?
No.
Did you ever think? How do you know?
It says where God will rest. And
the place where God will rest, and that's right, which is the Beit HaMikdash. Not the Mishkan. It happens that the halacha is that they brought Bikurim to the Mishkan and Shiloh, but not to the other Mishkans. Okay. The Ramban over here writes that maybe the idea is that the Pasuk in Parashas Mishpatim, the Torah speaks about Bikurim a little bit, and then the full discussion of Bikurim is here in Kitavo, right? Remember, when we speak about Devarim being Mishnah Torah, it doesn't mean that we're only repeating. It means that we're elaborating. The Torah Mishpatim says, "Reishas Bikurim Ad Masva Tavi Beis Hashem Alokecha." Zok the Ramban Beis Hashem Alokecha means that there's only a mitzvah to bring Bikurim to a bayis, to a house. And the Mishkan, when it was in Nov and Givon and Gilgal, was not a bayis. It was an ohel. It was a bayis in Shiloh, because in Shiloh it was a stone structure. No. But elsewhere, the Mishkan was a house. Okay. Elsewhere, the Mishkan is a tent. Okay, that's the comment of the Ramban. Let's go on in the Rashi. Mereshit, Zakt Rashi. Adam yorin l'toch sadehu, v'ra'et ta'ina shebikra, korecha lahagemi l'siman, v'omer harezu bikurim. You go down to the field, and you see that there is a just bloomed te'ina, a fig. You wrap a string on it, and you say, this is Bikurim. Apparently, there is a halacha that you have to be makdish Bikurim. No? You have to say that this is holy with Kedushas Bikurim. Now, ordinarily, I have a halacha by other mitzvahs hatzluyas baritz. I have to say something. I have to say, this is truma, this is meiser, this is challah. But usually I cannot say it until I do hafrasha, until I separate it. The chiddush of bikurim, the way Rashi is saying it over here, is that you could say harezu bikurim when it's still attached. No? The fruit is growing. Now again, obviously conceptually, the point over here is that you're a farmer, you've been waiting all year for your fruit to ripen, and suddenly the first fruit ripens, and if I'd be a farmer, I'd be really excited, and I'd invite my friends to come in and to have a party, and here, eat my new grapes, my new figs. Right? The Torah says, no, that's not what you do. What you do is you wrap a string around it, and you say, this is Hashem's. The Rishonim over here have an interesting comment. Again, now when I speak about Rishonim, I'm talking about the Rishonim on Rashi. They say that you are supposed to view your ownership of the land not like you own the land. God owns the land. We are sharecroppers. Right? You probably don't remember sharecroppers. You get a portion of it if you do the job properly. The owner gives you a portion. But the first section has to go to the owner. And the owner is God. Right? God as represented by Yaakov, the Kohen.
Yes.
Right? God as represented by the Kohen is the owner, and that's the mitzvah of Bikurim. The first bit, I'm showing I'm not really the owner. Okay? Now, let's go. The importance of Mikra Bikurim that we're going to study now is that these are the verses that we all recite Leil HaSeder as the Haggadah. And the reason why it's called Haggadah is because of this pasuk. You come to the Kohen, who's around in those days, we'll talk about that in a second, and you tell the Kohen, Higadti Hayom LaShem Elokecha. Higadti means, right, Haggadah. I said it, presumably. Actually, it doesn't mean that. We'll talk about that in a second. I told God, your God, I'm saying to the Kohen, I told your God that I came to the land that God promised our fathers to give us. That's what the Torah says. Now, a few points. You say, Higadati Hayom. What does Higadati Hayom mean? Presumably means, I already said. I already told God. When did you say anything? This is the first thing that you're saying.
But didn't you say a minute ago you pointed out to the...
So I went down up. So it could be that I already told God that when I wrapped the fruit, maybe that's what it means. And maybe that's a proof to that idea that the Bikurim requires Dibur. But there's another alternative to learn. And the alternative is that the word Haggadah does not mean to speak. Haggadah means to demonstrate, to show, to do stuff.
Show and tell.
Right? Show and tell, right? Right? Hashamayim Mesabrim Kvod El. Uma'asei yadav magid harakia. Right? I don't know about you, but this guy doesn't speak to me. This guy doesn't talk. What does it mean, ma'asei yadav magid harakia? It means that the existence of this guy tells a story, that there is a God.
You have an empty metaphor.
What?
There's a song. The heavens declare the glory.
That's what we're quoting. I'm just saying it in Hebrew, Frida. Right?
Yeah, but isn't it an extension or metaphorical meaning? Magid, it's saying is the same.
But the point, I think, is that in Tanakh, we have the word magid not in the sense of articulating speech. And it could be that this person is coming and he's saying, Higati Hayom, meaning the very fact that I am here, the very fact that I am bringing this fruit to Yerushalayim, that itself is a testament that God gave me the land that God promised. And it ain't really mine, it's given to me by God. So he's speaking to the Kohen. The Amarita Elav, you tell the Kohen that I Higati Hayom. I already told your God, I already, by bringing these fruits, that is as if I'm telling your God, you the Kohen's God, that I came, and I came to God's land, etc.
Here we have the Nishba that you said was missing before.
Huh?
Here we have the word Nishba, which you said was missing before. Before you said, oh, your Kisava could be conditional,
or perhaps... Right, so here Hashem promised us the land, exactly. And so apparently you recognize that I've arrived to the land that that Hashem promised. Look at Rashi. Pasuk Gimel. Right? Uvata la kohen asher yeh bayamim ahem. You come to the kohen who's around in those days. Zokt Rashi, ein lecha ela kohen shebiyamecha kamo shehu. You only have the kohen of your times. Now, this principle is found in Chazal in the concept of Ein Lecha Ela Shofet B'Yamecha. No? The Yiftach B'Doro K'Shmuel B'Doro. Shmuel was a pretty decent fellow, no? Yiftach was hanging out with like these Anashim Rekim, these like empty fellows. So Yiftach is your leader, right? You know, again, Lahavdil, but maybe not so Lahavdil. Trump is a president. Abraham Lincoln's a president.
Yeah.
Ein lecha ela shofet
b'yamecha.
Right? Never.
Our president.
Right? He's our president. He's our president. Ein lecha ela shofet b'yamecha. But we're saying this about the mitzvah of Bikurim. Why is Rashi emphasizing this with respect to Bikurim? This principle that appears in so many different mitzvos. Like, you take the people you have. The king is the king. The leader is the leader. The kohen is the kohen. Why does Rashi have to emphasize this by Bikurim? So the Mefarshim on Rashi comment that Bikurim is different than every other mitzvah that we give to the kohanim. You see, when I give truma to a kohen, who comes to whom? Does the mountain come to Mohammed, or does Mohammed go to the mountain? Who goes to whom?
You go with the kohen.
Usually, the kohen comes to me to get truma, no? I have stuff in my field, I take it off, and the kohen comes, and I can decide to give it to him or not, but the kohen's going to go around and collect the stuff.
Oh, yes.
Bikurim is unique! That Bikurim, you bring it to the kohen. Right? You bring it to Yerushalayim. So therefore, you're going to say, you know what? I'm going to bring it to Yerushalayim. I'm going to decide which kohen I'll give it to. And I want to give it to a really righteous kohen. You know, someone who studies in the house of the sages on the Lower East Side or something. You know, someone who's like, really... You have no idea what I'm talking about. Right? You have, so it's like they have the best calendar. Those guys,
yeah.
Right? They've looked like they're 150 years old for the last 200 years. It's amazing. But I'm going to give it to a holy kohen. Says the Torah, no. Ein lecha lo kohen shebi yamecha. You give it to the kohen, whichever kohen is there. Don't wait for the best kohen. Then, v'amarta elav, zakt Rashi, you say, she'encha kafui tova. You say that you are not an ingrate. Kafui tova, to be kofem, means to turn it upside down. It's like if I have a basket, the opening is supposed to be on top. I could turn the basket upside down, that's kofem. I'm flipping it over. And I'm not recognizing the good. Now, what's Rashi bothered by when it says "Va'amarta elav she'incha kafui tova"? What's Rashi bothered by over here? So apparently, look at the whole pasuk. The pasuk is that you say to the kohen, "I came to the land." You're not really saying anything. The real statement begins in pasuk hey, which is "Ar Hagodah, Arami Obid Obi Vayerid Mitzrayim," etc. No. The real statement is not in Pasuk Gimel. So what's Va'amarta Elav? Says Rashi, Va'amarta Elav means that my very presence here, my very presence, I'm bringing my first fruit to Yerushalayim, that shows that I'm not a Kafui Tova, that I recognize the favor that Hashem gave us, Eretz Yisrael. I recognize that I don't deserve it, it's not because it's mine, it's not Kochi Va'otzem Yodi, it's that Hashem gave us the land. That's the end of the conversation. Again, what?
Let's say you're 5 days away from Yerushalayim.
Right.
Yeah.
How did the fruit stay ripe?
Yes, that's a great question. Apparently, you're supposed to bring the fruit at a time that they will be ripe when you get to Yerushalayim and give it to the Kohen. You don't eat the Bikurim at all. You give it to the Kohen, he's going to eat it, but you should time these things in a way.
What if
I don't
the
know.
Shuttle's late?
It's an art, huh?
Because Rashi said
if the shuttle is late.
If the shuttle is late, yeah.
Because Rashi said that you put the knot around the food when you see
when it first ripens. He doesn't say when you begin to make the trick.
Yeah.
Right? Does not say that at all in the Rashi. Now, some of the Mefarshim comment that the reason why the Psukim of the Haggadah are taken from here is because the entire lesson of Mikra Bikurim is to show that I'm not an ingrate, that I recognize the good things that happened. And that's really the lesson of the Haggadah, no? I always speak about Dayenu on the second day of Pesach. Dayenu is the lesson of I should be grateful for everything, even though it doesn't seem to be the end of the line. Right? Blah, 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 right? And you always ask the question, like, what would it be worth, right? Every little fourth grader, like, I don't understand. What's it worth coming in front of Har Sinai if we won't get the Torah? The answer is that part of being grateful is to recognize every stage in the process, right? This is a halacha that, you know, in Eretz Yisrael, when you don't have rain for a while, and then it rains, so the Gemara Bracha says that there's a special bracha that you recite. Modim anachnu l'cha Hashem Elokeinu al kol tipa v'tipa shehoradta lanu. We thank the Ribbono Shel Olam for every drop. Hakaras hatov, or the opposite of not being a kafui tova, is that you recognize the little things. Very important in relationships, no? If you only say thank you for the really big stuff, right? Thank you very much for buying me this most amazing gift. It don't really work. But if you know how to say, to appreciate the small things that are done, the small sacrifices on a daily basis, that really shows that you're not a kafui tova, and apparently the mitzvah of Bikurim isn't really such a big gift, no? It's not big. Small little things, fine. The next Rashi says, Higati ayom pamachat b'shanav lo shtei pamim. If I bring Bikurim, one time a year, I recite Mikra Bikurim. I could have fruits that ripen at different times. These are Mishnayis and Baba Basra, if you're interested. But there are grapes have one season, and olives have a different season. Anyone here a farmer? No? Different fruits ripen at different times, right? Tova, you're a farmer?
Yeah, did you read about this guy that Forest Sider has a vineyard?
He grew a vineyard where? On his roof?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
It's like a thing now. I didn't know that you
were
growing.
What? He's like 80 and he's been doing it for like 40 years.
That's actually really cool.
Yeah.
It's possible to grow stuff. The point is, fruits don't all ripen at the same time. I only go through the entire Bikurim process with the first fruits that I bring up. I'm going to have to bring the rest of my fruits up. Later on, my olives will ripen, and I'll bring those up to Yerushalayim, but I only say the Mikra Bikurim the first time. There's something about the excitement of this first process, Zakt Rashi. Right? Rashi says, Pamachas b'shana, v'lo shtei pa'amim b'shana, etc. Maisa and Truma applies to fruits midrabanan. Min haTorah, there's only Truma and Maisa on Dagon, Tirush, and Yitar, on grain, wine, and oil. It happens
so
that grain, wine, and oil are all the Shivas Haminim, no?
So how would you philosophically distinguish? What's the difference? Fruit you just give the first fruit, these other things you're giving these portions.
Yeah, so it's hard to know. It's hard to know how to distinguish. Apparently, HaKadosh Baruch Hu feels that part of the mitzvah of Bikurim is the praise of Eretz Yisrael, so all the Shivas Haminim. There's no mitzvah to give Truma from a pomegranate Minatorah. There's a mitzvah to give Bikurim from a pomegranate Minatorah. It happens that my wheat, I have to give both Truma Minatorah and Bikurim Minatorah on. No? There are slight differences between Bikurim and Trumas Amaisris, perhaps in terms of like what we mentioned in terms of which parts of Eretz Yisrael you bring it from. We mentioned Eivar HaYarden. There's probably a chiyuv of trumas hamaisus min haTorah and ever hayarden. There's no chiyuv of bikur min haTorah and ever hayarden. The Ran and the Dharm writes. Hey, whatever it is, there are slight differences, but
yeah.
I think the idea is that these mitzvahs represent something a little different. Yeah.
Okay, so aren't we supposed to bring these fruits around Shavuot time?
Okay, so we'll talk about when you bring the fruits. You bring that any time between Shavuos until Sukkot with Mikra Bikurim. You can bring them until Chanukah without Mikra Bikurim. We'll see that in Rashi in a few minutes if we can continue.
I have no question.
Okay, let's go on. The Kohen takes the basket and the Kohen puts it in front of the Mizbeach. Right? That's Pasuk Daled. Rashi comments that the Kohen takes the basket and the Kohen waves it. Waving is something that is done by karbanos. The tenufa that's done on Bikurim indicates that on some level, and this is what I tell my students is advanced Talmud, for on some level, Bikurim has a status of a karban. That is already interesting, but I don't think we could flesh that out now. Pasuk Hey. V'anisa v'amarto lufnei Hashem Elokecha. What does v'anisa mean?
Speak loud.
You what?
Speak loud.
Speak, how do you know that? Usually what does v'anisa mean?
Answer. I answer.
You answer, right? How does art school translate v'anisa, Pasuk Hey?
Call out.
Call out. That's correct. Right? V'anisa means that you should announce loudly. It can't mean that you respond because no one said anything to you. It's interesting that the Targum Unklus translates of Anisa here as Visa Save, which sounds like you should respond.
Yeah.
Right? Don't understand why. Rashi's telling me, but Anisa here means Lashon Haramas Kol, that you say it loudly. And you say, Arami Oveda V. You mention what Hashem did, or the chesed that he did. And Rashi commenting, quoting from the Haggadah, Rashi says, Lavan bikesh lakaris hakol. Lavan wanted to kill everybody. When did Lavan want to kill everybody? When did Lavan want to kill everybody? Not exactly clear, no?
When Eliezer came to Shiloh.
So you're a Lamdan, right? Mr. Baum is saying that the Mishnah in Gittin tells us that if I send a shaliach to marry a woman and the shaliach dies and you don't know who they got married, so I can't marry any woman in the world because maybe the woman I want to marry is the sister of the woman who I'm actually married to. No? Remember, Ignatz sends a shaliach to marry somebody, and the shaliach dies. Presumably the shaliach did his job, so somebody is married to Ignatz. Well, Ignatz can't go and marry any other girl in the world who had a sister ever, because maybe when Ignatz marries girl number two is the sister of the girl he's actually married to, and you can't marry the sister of your wife, correct?
In her life.
So, usually it's understood, at least the drasha goes, that since Lavan wanted to poison Eliezer, right? Remember Rashi and Chumash has, that Eliezer goes to marry a girl for Yitzchak, right? And Lavan goes to poison him. Lavan and Basul goes to poison him. So since they're going to poison Eliezer, so then maybe the shaliach, you won't know who was married, and then you can't marry anybody, and that would be Lavan bikesh lakaris hakol. That's the way the drasha goes. That's not what Rashi says. That's, huh? When they say that, Rashi and Chumash write that Lavan and Basul have a meal with Eliezer, and they put some poison over there, and the malach comes and mixes the poison up, and that's why Basul died.
Right.
Oh no, I remember this like from third grade, right? It's there, it's somewhere, it's gotta be, right? Because I learned in third grade, it's obvious. Everything we learned in third grade is true. Huh? Maybe not.
But in other things, you could marry sisters.
So you're like, you're trying to kill a good shtickle Torah. That's not fair. Now, but Rashi doesn't say that. Rashi writes that the time that Lavan wanted to kill everybody is Kisharadav Achar Yaakov, when Lavan pursues Yaakov. This is the episode in Bereishis chapter 31. Basically, what happened was that Rachel stole these trafim. And no one knows exactly who stole the trafim. And Lavan goes to pursue Yaakov, right? And how come you ran away? How come you didn't let me kiss my family? Etc. So Lavan is trying to kill everybody. That seems to be the episode that Rashi is referring to when Lavan is pursuing Yaakov. That's the way Rashi quotes it. Now, some of the Mefarshim over here comment that when Lavan tried to kill Yaakov, he wasn't really trying to kill them. But if you read that episode in Parashas Vayetze, Lavan says to Yaakov, Habanos binosai, v'habanim banai. Where is that pasuk? It's in Bereishis 31.
Right before
Maskir. Bar Mitzvah Parasha? Right before Maskir, right?
Pasuk Chavav.
Pasuk Chavav, thank you.
Sorry,
No. No, here. That first of all, God has to come to Lavan and say, don't kill Yaakov. Don't do anything to Yaakov. And Lavan says at one point that all the kids are mine. Everything is mine, no? Yeah, that's Pasuk Mem Gimel. The beginning of Shavi. Vaya'an Lavan vayomar Yaakov habanos b'nosai v'abanim b'nai v'atzon tzonei. So some of the Mefarshim say that Lavan tried to kill everybody. It doesn't mean he wants to actually kill them. But what it means is that Lavan is saying, you know what? Your kids are really mine. And that would be killing Yaakov in the sense that the entire Jewish line, that is a line that is repudiating all the values of Lavan, etc. Lavan is trying to claim that that line is his.
Right.
And that would be killing Yaakov in a spiritual sort of way. Again, it's not clear, but let's just finish this Rashi, because Rashi over here adds a dimension, and he brings up a Gemara at the end of, or at the end of the first parak of Kedushin, where the Gemara does not prove this. Right? Rashi writes that Sheba Umos HaOlam, with respect to the Goyim, Choshev HaKadosh Baruch Hu Machshava Kemaisa. Rashi's bothered by Akasha. The Torah says Arami Oved Avi, that Lavan destroyed my father, but he didn't do it. He wasn't successful. So Rashi, by Goyim, B'Umos HaOlam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, takes a machshava l'ra'a, like a maisa. God says, oh, you're trying to kill them? We'll view it like you killed them already. By Jews, God takes our good actions like we did it. By the non-Jews, Hashem takes their bad actions like they did it. The assumption is that a Jew is intrinsically adverse to doing averos. So you think you're going to do something bad? You're just thinking, you're just playing around. You think you'll do a mitzvah? We'll give you credit. Goyim, right? Again, I don't know how to sugarcoat this one, right? But Goyim are intrinsically inclined to do bad, and they think about doing bad. God views it like they did bad.
You don't have to make it like, there could be a common end zone, right? There's some sort of grief.
Some sort of grief
sworn between God and the Jews. Right.
Okay.
So in order to violate the terms of the contract, it takes more than just
thinking that you'll violate it. But by the non-Jews, because they don't have a covenantal relationship, so then, okay, again, that certainly is a way of making it more palatable. I'll say it like that.
No, I'm saying maybe it's more philosophically acceptable. It's a little bit of a, question,
right? If they didn't actually do something, how can Hashem punish them? So you're saying, because what? With the Jewish people, Hashem has a covenant, and that covenant means that you can't break it until you actually break it. With the non-Jews, there's no covenant. But still, how come when they think about doing something bad, it's as if they did it already?
Like,
that question is still real.
Your citizenship removed, stripped from you in this country. I don't know what you have to do.
High treason or something.
Even then, I don't think you're no longer a citizen.
Yeah.
Right, you're subject.
Takes talent.
Yeah, whereas in order to get deported, and have your citizenship stripped you for an immigrant.
Yeah. But still, but the idea of machshava ra'ah and spoken tzarif l'maisa is more than just being deported.
No,
it's saying that because you're thinking. In other words, because you're thinking
because
of
it's
doing.
It's not about a physical earth. It's about your relationship between yourself and your body, your agency and your body. So why does any human have a right to agency?
Uh-huh.
I'm thinking about citizenship as a kind of human agency. So why does any human?
I know my wife is talking about these topics now. Maybe. Maybe there's something to it. I have to admit, I'm still troubled by this concept. The concept still bothers me, but Rashi is employing this concept over here that Lavan, Arami Oved Avi, says Rashi that Lavan actually destroyed us because he planned on doing it.
Is that concept not in the text of the Bible?
It's not.
Where does that concept come from? Why do you
right here.
No, but you're teasing that
Rashi's teasing it out, correct.
Again,
I don't know.
Well, it does say that an Aramean destroyed my father.
The Aramean who destroyed my father probably, again, Oved probably does not mean try to destroy, it probably means wandering. The simple meaning of the pasuk I think that Ibn Ezra has is that my father was a wandering Armenian or Aramean, Aramean, whatever it is. But the Baal HaGodah and Rashi Al HaTorah understand this way. Again, there's much more that we could say about the Parsha Bikurim, but I think it is late. I just wanted to learn a few Rashis with you to show that there is a lot of depth in the commentary of Rashi, and God willing, we will continue. Now, next week, I'm not 100% sure if we can have Shi'ur. I'm still not sure about the parent-teachers conference night and when it will work out. My wife claims that I have parent teachers next week. She has one on Tuesday, not on Wednesday?
That's what she said.
Oh, so then maybe we can have class on Wednesday. Okay. So, you know what? Right now, I am not yet canceling the class for next week. If I have to cancel, we will send out an email. Thank you for coming. Thank you for learning together. And have a good night.
Why